For critical information ignored by the mainstream media, log on to davidicke.com/headlines now.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. Thailand's former Prime Minister Yingluck Shinawatra has been sentenced to 5 years in prison in absentia after being found guilty of criminal negligence. The Supreme Court ruled she was guilty of mishandling a rice subsidy scheme, which is claimed to have cost Thailand $8 billion. She denies all charges and fled the country before the verdict. British Prime Minister Theresa May says she's bitterly disappointed at a move by the US to impose a tariff on aircraft made by the firm Bombardier, one of the biggest employers in Northern Ireland. The Canadian multinational aerospace and transportation company employs more than 4,000 people in Belfast. From London, Catherine Drew.
Northern Ireland had been braced for the ruling. However, the US decision to impose a 220% import tariff on the C-Series jet made by Bombardier is worse news than expected. The move was made after the US engineering giant Boeing complained Bombardier received unfair state subsidies from the UK and Canada, helping it win a major order. Bombardier described the ruling as absurd and accused Boeing of trying to stifle competition. The Office of Prime Minister Theresa May described the decision as bitterly disappointing, warning the ruling could damage the global aerospace industry. A spokesman for 10 Downing Street said the decision was not one that would be expected from a long-term partner.
UK Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn says his team is ready to run Britain. He's been telling his party conference the Conservative government is inept and divided.
Against all predictions, in June, we won the largest increase in the Labour vote since 1945. And achieved Labour's best vote for a generation. It's a result which has put the Tories on notice and Labour on the threshold of power.
Russia's media regulator says Facebook could face a ban in the country next year if it fails to comply with a law requiring companies to store Russian citizens' personal data on local servers. The US social network could follow LinkedIn after it was banned in Russia last year. Julia Liabova reports from Moscow.
The head of Russia's state media watchdog Roskomnadzor said that they have no plans to investigate Facebook until the end of 2017. However, this may change in 2018. Roskomnadzor chief Alexander Sharov was quoted by the Interfax news agency as saying that there are no exceptions to compliance with the data storage law. The September 2015 law requires companies to store Russian users' personal data on localized servers. It is estimated that Facebook has 14.4 million monthly and 6 million daily users in Russia as of last year. TASS agency quoted Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov as telling reporters on a conference call that there is legislation that should be respected.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Thank you very much, Ollie Barrett. And good evening to you. Hope you're well. It's Wednesday. Is it? It is the 27th of September 2017. I'm Richie Allen. It's wet and miserable, meaning it's Manchester. Happy birthday, Gary Myler or Mailer. Gary, I don't know how you pronounce it. Gary Myler, Gary Mailer. Long-time listener to the programme. Happy birthday, Gaz. Thanks for listening. Hope you had a good day. Let's do Wednesday's Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com.
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com. It's the Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with davidicke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
And I must say a warm welcome to the programme to Mistress Violet Storm, whom I chat with occasionally on Twitter. Violet listens to the programme when she's not doling out the corporal punishment. Violet, hope you're well. We've got a serious programme, enough of the silly gags, a very serious programme for you today. I'll be welcoming back to the show the activist and the child protection campaigner, Robert Green. You will remember Robert made national headlines in this country when he was jailed, wrongfully in my opinion, for asking very tough questions of the state surrounding the abuse of Holly Gregg, who was subjected to years of abuse by a gang in Aberdeen, many of those abusing her very well-known people, connected politically. and otherwise. The police failed to investigate the claims and subsequently, in my opinion, by not investigating the claims for whatever reasons, put others at risk. And for exposing this and for naming some of the abusers, Robert Green was jailed twice, in fact. Now on Sunday, and I wouldn't have known anything about this if it weren't for David tipping me off, and that's because the Sunday Times newspaper, I can't get it locally, not without going out of my way anyway, and it's a subscription service. So I didn't know. The Sunday Times ran a story this Sunday just gone on the investigation into former UK Prime Minister Edward Heath. And you will know that that investigation is being headed up by Wiltshire Constable Mike Veal. He's heading it up. Now, the Sunday Times did a hatchet job on Mike Veal and Robert Green and said that basically Veal's investigation into Heath is compromised because he spoke with Robert Green. The Sunday Times called Robert unstable and said he wasn't available for comment. Well, he's available to the Richie Allen Show on davidicke.com for comment, and we'll talk to Robert, whom I have a lot of time for. I really do. I've looked at that story from every angle. I knew nothing about it. I was in Spain when this was, I suppose, very raw here in the UK. Without davidicke.com, I wouldn't have known anything about it. But Robert was on this programme last January, and I find Robert very credible. In fact, I believe him, and I'm going to be very interested to hear what he has to say about the Edward Heath investigation, and we'll catch up on what's been happening to him since we last spoke with him in January. Now, I know there are people who don't believe the scale or don't credit or give any credit to the idea that child abuse on the scale claimed by David Icke and Robert Green and others is going on. And I know that a lot of those people are genuine, they just don't believe it. And some of those people got in touch with me today and said they think Robert jumped the gun in Scotland and that Robert was out of line in terms of the way that he went about doing what he did. Now, I don't agree with that. I must put that on the record. But he said, oh, you won't put that to him, Richie. Well, I will put that to him later on. We're going to have the best part of 90 minutes. We are fair and we are open. And I will say, look, there are people out there, Robert, and they think you went about what you did the wrong way, and you maybe put maybe innocent people, maybe possibly in harm's way. Now, as I said, I don't agree with that. But listeners are saying, pop that question to Robert. Of course I'll do that. And he'll be well able to answer it, I have no doubt. But we'll talk about Edward Heath and more besides as well on Wednesday's Richie Allen Show. It is Wednesday. I might have said it was Tuesday a few minutes ago. I am a bit of an idiot. It's Wednesday, the 27th of September 2017. And we are live on davidicke.com, on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and richieallen.co.uk. They are about to launch, I don't know if they did it today, they're about to launch the brand new look, all new, all singing, all dancing, davidicke.com. And it's up and running. I've just logged on it. And I saw a preview of it earlier on. It's absolutely fantastic. The latest version of davidicke.com is now online, and it is absolutely fantastic. Very, very user-friendly. It's got a great look to it. Congratulations to everybody involved. Bookmark davidicke.com. The new website is live now. Marvellous. Great stuff. We'll talk more about the new davidicke.com and on. And on. Right. Shall we do the headlines then? Yeah, let's do the headlines. Where's my bullet points? Oh, there they are. I make bullet points, you see. We don't do scripts in radio. We do bullet points. Right. Jeremy Corbyn is the leader of the Labour Party. You know that by now. You didn't need me to tell you. Today, he addressed the Labour Party conference, the annual conference I told you about yesterday, which is in Brighton. Now, these speeches by all of the leaders, not just Jeremy, whether it's left-wing party, right-wing party, centrist party, the speeches are full of sloganeering, in my opinion anyway, empty rhetoric. We're for the many and not for the few, blah, blah, blah. You've seen one of these conferences and you've seen them all. They must be dreadfully boring experiences for the journalists who have to go to them. Again, not just the Labour one, all of them. They're like one big long silly rally that never ends. One speaker after another extols the virtues of the party to pretty much loud applause from the party members. And the party members are on a jolly up. Now, for our listeners overseas, Google jolly up. It means they're having the life of Riley for 3 days. 4 days, whatever. Most of them can't wait for the speeches to end so the bonking can begin. I did say bonking. Yes, bonking can begin. Apparently, I'm not speaking from experience. I am not. But apparently party members, the membership, the grassroots members, supporters, local councillors, MPs, spend the evenings getting rat-arsed and shagging like rabbits. Again, for our listeners overseas, Google rat-arsed. It means getting drunk, senseless, and shagging like rabbits. Google shagging like rabbits. Anyway, good for them. I've got no problem with that. But that's what the conference is. It's a jolly up. Chance to get pissed for a few days. Bit of sloganeering going on the main stage, and that's it. So what did Corbyn say? Well, he said, we're now the mainstream. He really did. This is Tony Blair garbage. We hold the centre ground, he said. This is all, again, old ground covered by Blair and Peter Mandelson and Gordon Brown and all the rest of them. He said that only Labour, because it's holding the centre ground, could unite Leave and Remain voters. Trying to think of what he said. Yeah, he said only Labour could unite Leave and Remain voters. He said he would repair the damage done by austerity. Didn't give any details. And he said his own personal principles came from his mum and dad and the North London community that he lives in. He asked for another snap election. He said to UK Prime Minister Theresa May, take another walking holiday and make another impetuous decision. And he condemned the intolerable abuse which has been aimed at Diane Abbott. And he sang happy birthday to Diane Abbott from the stage. Was there any substance? Not a lot. He talked about rent controls. And importantly, and this is really important, he said that Labour would push for unimpeded access to the single market. Labour would push for unimpeded access to the single market. And he said Labour would fight to protect jobs and wages while rejecting immigration targets. Right? We want unimpeded access and we will reject immigration targets. Now, I'm not being immature and I'm not being disingenuous when I say that means open the doors, let anyone and everyone in. That's the progressive mantra. And to be fair, watching the speech today, Corbyn relished saying it. We won't allow immigrants to be blamed for our woes, he said, or words to that effect. We won't blame immigrants. We'll stop immigrant blaming. Now, this is a unique brand of bullshit for the progressives. Because at least from what I can see in Manchester, in South Manchester, people are not blaming the immigrants. And this is what David talked about last night when he made his impromptu appearance on the programme. And thankfully he did. He talked about this nonsense. Mischaracterising or the mischaracterisation of what people are doing and what people are saying. People are not blaming the immigrants. People are saying that immigration has cost them their jobs or caused their wages to stagnate or to plummet because firms hire cheaper labour. When cheaper labour is available, firms hire cheaper labour. That's not blaming the immigrants because it isn't the fault of the migrant workforce. It isn't their fault. You can't make a credible argument to say that your Polish neighbour who's taking less than minimum wage under the table from an employer or his wife or the Croatian guy across the street, you can't blame them. It's not their fault. Saying to your government, please stop flooding the marketplace with men and women from overseas because there aren't enough jobs, number one, And number two, these folks, God bless them, are willing to work for feck all and take all the shit in the world that their UK employer throws at them. So please stop doing that. Please stop doing that. Stop the flow of economic migrants. Please look after us, give us a job and give us a living wage. That's what people are saying. But to Jeremy Progressive Corbyn, it's racism. Don't blame the immigrants. See, Corbyn is listening to truly vile people like Seamus Milne from The Guardian and his glove puppet Owen Jones from The Guardian, the Momentum movement. Which means what? How do you say this? It means that complicated and serious issues are reduced to slogans or to a few simple absolutes. Example, if you're questioning migration, you're a racist and we won't tolerate immigrant blaming. We're not blaming the immigrants. We want jobs. We want jobs that pay a living wage. We want jobs that give us enough money to pay rent, gas and electric, water, TV, internet, put food on the table, clothes on our kids. We want jobs that cover the basics of life, life necessities. Not jobs that mean 2.5 weeks into the month, we have sod all left of our monthly wage and we have to go to Wonga or some other bastard payday lender, money lenders, extortionate, hateful companies. Because that's the reality faced by people. I have friends. I'm not a hermit. I have friends in this city and they work 9-to-5 jobs. Some of them, they work 2-3 shifts. And a third or a halfway through the month, they've got sod all. They've got nothing. And they're either borrowing from friends, mum and dad, or they're going to a payday lender. Because they've got nothing. They're not out getting pissed. They're not buying 4 or 5 packets of cigarettes a week and all the garbage that they'll be accused of. They're not. They just can't pay their way. It's as simple as that. So that's what we want, Jeremy. But what did Corbyn's speech give us today? More of the same. You haven't listened to us. You'll do sod all to stop the migrant workforce undercutting us for jobs. In our country, you'll call us racist. Just another version of Jeremy Corbyn even is just another version of Bernie Sanders. That's it, really. But his devotees and those who sing Oh Jeremy Corbyn to the tune of Seven Nation Army from the White Stripes, they won't hear a word of it. This is the progressive, this is the narcissism inherent in the identitarian society. Can't have our opinions challenged. So it's lunacy. Speaking of speaking out about things and getting hammered for it, I thought you might find this interesting. I got this on davidicke.com/headlines today. The Duke and Duchess of Cambridge are ridiculous. And they should have their public funding scrapped, their local MP has said. She also called Kate's spending on clothes disgusting. Who said this? A woman called Emma Dent Code, who was elected in June for the Labour Party, Kensington MP. So she's responsible for Grenfell. You've got to be very careful how you phrase things on the radio, don't you? She had nothing to do with the fire at Grenfell. Grenfell is in her jurisdiction. So she's been bitching about the Royals. And she says, their MP, me, thinks the system is ridiculous. She said, they're ridiculous. We shouldn't be funding them, she said. And she went on to say that, a number of things, including that she didn't believe that Prince Harry could really fly a helicopter. Right. I have no idea whether Harry can fly a helicopter or not. I couldn't care less. But it's a good point. We shouldn't be funding them, she said. She said that the Duchess of Cambridge boys' jumpers at an estimated cost of £150 each a time. She said that's a food bill for a family of four. That's outrageous, she said. She didn't hold back when talking about the BBC and some of the newspapers. What did she say? Well, she said, the BBC coverage of the royal family is sickeningly gratuitous. Of anything royal, she said. And she accused it of being directed by right-wing politics and the monarchy. So there's a big scandal about this today. Sky, the BBC, ITN News, the papers. It's scandalous that she said this. Do you know what she said today, which I thought was interesting? Emma Dent Code. She said, I've spoken 5 times at conference about the Grenfell fire. But this is all the newspapers want to know about, my comments on the royal family. And then she said something very important. She said, we should be allowed to have an opinion. Jesus, that's not a bad idea, isn't it? It's actually not a bad idea. We should be allowed to have an opinion, even if people don't like it. Of course we should be allowed to have an opinion, especially about giving millions of pounds in relief to the biggest benefits groundsters, absolute pikeys, the royal family. I mean, the royal family are the most comfortable shower of pikeys. That's not politically correct, Richie. You should call them members of the travelling community. I should. And I genuinely know some travellers. And they're pretty good people. I say pikeys because it will make my UK-based audience laugh out loud. It's not meant to be derogatory to travelling people. Just a laugh. But they are pikeys. Big, disgusting pikeys, aren't they? And many of these palaces that they have around the country, their own income, they're worth hundreds of millions of pounds, and people have to fork out money for them every year. It's absolutely insane. Not to mention, at least a half a dozen of them should be in prison for paedophilia. In Canada. But we'll get into that again in the future. It's 21 minutes past the hour. Here's a story sent to me today by Natalie Stacey. I know this is covered by David and the team as well today. This is just madness. I mean, we do sometimes go over the top when we talk about madness. We say it's madness. It becomes a cliche. It loses its impact, doesn't it? It's madness. But this is fucking madness. Listen to this. This is from the Croydon Advertiser newspaper. Thank you, Natalie. All staff and pupils at Croydon's Whitgift School are to be vaccinated after an outbreak of hepatitis. Do it again, Richie. All staff and pupils at Croydon's Whitgift School are to be vaccinated after an outbreak of hepatitis A. Whitgift School is in urgent talks with the NHS about dealing with the infectious disease. There's been an outbreak of hepatitis A. I can't even say it. There's been an outbreak of hepatitis A at Whitgift School. It's deadly. It's serious. Every pupil, every teacher, goddammit, is going to have to be injected. Helicopters are hovering over the playground. Rope ladders are dropped out of those helicopters and Marines are sliding down, armed with vaccines. Public Health England said, yes, we are in talks with the South Croydon School over a single case of the infectious disease. It is not yet clear when the outbreak occurred. However, a source said, wait for it, it was pandemonium at the Whitgift School. Somebody has hepatitis A? You're thinking, aren't you? Hepatitis A must be deadly. It must be like smallpox. It must be like the Ebola virus. Pandemonium, according to the parents. Dr. Rachel Thorne. Oh, Dr. Rachel Thorne Heathcock. That's her name. Dr. Rachel Thorne Heathcock works for Public Health England, their health protection team. She said, we've been liaising with staff and parents. We've contacted the parents of all children attending the school, along with the staff, to inform them of the situation and provide information about hepatitis A and the symptoms. As a precautionary measure, hepatitis A vaccination will be given to all children and staff at the school to prevent any spread of the infection. And we are working closely with the local NHS to provide this. Die Hard, Commando and Rambo 4 are flying in. Then she said, wait for this. Because you're thinking hepatitis A, right? Deadly, right? Deadly. Pandemonium. Pandemonium. Then she said this. This is out of the mouth of Dr. Rachel Thorne Heathcock, who said, it is important to stress that hepatitis A rarely causes long-term liver damage. Unlike other hepatitis viruses, most people usually feel better within a few weeks and have no long-term problems. Often, hepatitis A doesn't cause any symptoms, particularly in children who may be unaware that they have had the infection. Parents have been advised to seek medical attention if children develop any symptoms. So hepatitis A is about as dangerous as cutting yourself shaving. But there's pandemonium in the school. Teams of Marines and SAS officers are rushing to the scene with vaccines. Doesn't do anything to anybody, hepatitis A, so why vaccinate them all? Thank you, Natalie Stacey. I'm leaving that. I'm leaving that. And finally, and a big shout out to, can't remember who sent me this, so my apologies for not remembering who sent me this, but one of our listeners on Twitter sent me this story. I will credit him, but it's a story that appeared on BBC Leeds in West Yorkshire a short time ago. You think these are small stories that are just a bit silly. This is just silly stuff, and it is the exception, not the rule. Richie, that's what you're going to say. It isn't the exception, not the rule. This is the madness of the nanny state. Listen to this. Bradford School bans sausage rolls from packed lunches. Holy Jesus. Sausage rolls. A school ban on sausage rolls and other unhealthy foods in pupils' lunchboxes has divided opinion. The new policy at Shirley Manor Primary The new policy at Shirley Manor Primary Academy in Bradford states parents will be called if banned foods are found in packed lunches, including sausage rolls. Steve Fryer, his son, had his sausage roll confiscated, said the school should stick to teaching kids. Do they do that, Steve? Do they teach the kids? Other parents have praised the school for healthy eating. You're not having that sausage roll. We're going to call your parents. I'd love to be phoned by one of these idiots, if I had a son, to say the sausage roll you packed in your son's lunchbox for his lunch has been taken away from him, and we want you to come and see us. I'm coming to see you, all right. I'm coming to see you. And I'm going to see how many of those sausage rolls I can stick up your fucking arse. Call the Guinness Book of World Records. Call Roy Castle. Rest in peace. God love Roy. How many sausage rolls can you stuff in the rectum of an idiot headmaster? Sausage rolls. Right. We're going to have a break. When we come back, I'll read some tweets. Then we'll get serious and we'll talk with Robert Green. I admire Robert greatly. I'm looking forward to hearing from him again. It's been a while. We'll have a break is what we'll do.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Sign up today. Email Sue on nassusproductions@gmail.com.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is The Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Welcome back. Tommy B sent me the sausage roll story. Tommy, thank you very much for that. Very good. Jason Holmes says, Richie, I think the progressives will call you a far-right socialist. Imagine that head. Fuck, he says, yes, absolutely right. Keep the tweets coming in. Gojira tweets, one teaspoon of a sausage roll up your arse and you will all end up with hepatitis A. Very good. William Henderson, my Scottish friend, says, Richie, the Royals ain't pikeys, that's too kind. They are more oversized vermin, a plague on society. You're not going to get much Royal love on the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com, not from our listeners anyway. Hi to Jason as well. Hi to Ruthie, to Faisal, to Peter, to everybody else who's tweeting. And we're going to take some music now while I get Robert Green on the show. Do tweet the programme. It's at Richie Allen Show during the conversation with Robert. He's going to be on for most of the rest of the programme. And, well, pretty much the rest of the programme, I should say. And you can email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Looking forward to seeing Neil Diamond on Sunday. I told you about this yesterday. Guilty pleasure. It's more than a guilty pleasure. A little bit of Neil Diamond. And in 2.5 minutes' time, we'll have Robert Green on the programme. Looking forward to that. So it's 29 minutes to the top of the hour. It's the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com, Fab Radio 2, TuneIn Radio, and richieallen.co.uk. Back in a minute.
Don't sing and dance and it don't walk. As long as I can have you here with me, I'd much rather be forever in blue jeans. Honey's sweet, but it ain't nothing next to baby's treat. But if you pardon me, I'd like to say
Neil Diamond on your Richie Allen Show. Welcome back to the programme. If you're just joining us, welcome. It's Wednesday, September 27th, 2017. Just before we say good evening to our guest on the programme today, let me read you from the Sunday Times this Sunday. I said at the top of the programme, I missed it. Don't always see the Times. David tipped me off to it. The article, the headline was, Fresh Doubt Over Heath Sex Inquiry. An email links the chief constable heading the paedophilia investigation to a man convicted over false abuse accusations. And it reads, just very briefly, I'll read you just a little bit of it. The police chief in charge of the sex abuse inquiry into former Prime Minister Ted Heath has been in personal email contact with a campaigner who was jailed for harassing people he falsely accused of paedophilia, the Sunday Times can reveal. Mike Veal, the Chief Constable of Wiltshire, emailed Robert Green of Warrington 2 weeks ago in response to an email Green had sent him. Veal wrote, "As ever, thank you, Robert." Now, the Sunday Times went on to say that this suggested that Robert had been in contact with Mike Veal previously, and ultimately that this throws, this throws the inquiry headed by Veal into some disrepute, because they go on to label Robert as unstable. That's in the Sunday Times. They also said that Robert was unavailable for a comment. We'll ask Robert about that in a minute. Now, I've listened to Robert Green, not only on this programme, but I've heard him over the years online speaking with various people. I've always found him to be thoughtful, to be lucid, to be relaxed, and to be, very, very listenable, very reasonable, very rational. That's been my experience of him over the years. Now, you know Robert, of course, through, many of you know him through davidicke.com. To refer back to the story, Robert made headlines in this country when he was wrongfully jailed, in my opinion, for asking tough questions and for naming people that he believed, there was overwhelming evidence, were committing heinous crimes, heinous sexual abuse crimes. This is all about Holly Gregg, who was subjected to years of abuse by a gang in Aberdeen. The police didn't investigate it properly. It's my opinion that when the police don't take these things seriously for whatever reason, they do put other children at risk, whether they mean to or not. Robert was jailed twice for this. We've been over this on the programme before, and he's been over it elsewhere as well. It's great to welcome him back to the programme. It's been 7 or 8 months, 9 months since we last spoke. Robert is in Warrington. Robert, thanks for coming back on. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you very much indeed, Richie. Thank you very much for those very kind words as well. I'm rather flattered by all those. But it is very nice of you to say that. And I'd just like to take the opportunity of thanking so many people who've phoned me and emailed me since they saw the article on Sunday, offering their support and how appalled they were with the article in general. So thank you all of you. I know I haven't had a chance to perhaps speak to all of you individually, but thank you for all your good wishes. You're all very angry for me. I see this as an opening, a disgraceful article, unbalanced, very poor standard of journalism, not making any comments about the fact that the Scottish government have been found to be broken the law twice over this. No mention of the fact that I had the honour of being nominated by a senior parliamentarian for the 2015 Nobel Peace Prize whilst I was being held in prison on the orders of Alex Salmond. Nothing of this at all, just a really very, very nasty piece of journalism. But most of all, it's not a question of trying to undermine the chief constables. Obviously, I've just been used on this one for the people who are trying to protect Edward Heath. So that's what it comes down to. They're just looking for someone, some way of actually trying to intimidate or undermine the chief constable further, which is a disgraceful piece of work anyway.
It is dreadful. Can I ask, did they get in touch with you or attempt to get in touch with you to ask you about...
They attempted to. I was actually, one of the rare times I was not contactable for a couple of days. I was just away for 2 or 3 days just to relax and not get involved in all the sort of things I spend my life dealing with. Very rare that happens. When I got back home on Sunday afternoon, I looked to see if there were any messages on my computer. And sure enough, there seemed to be frantic efforts by James Gillespie, one of the authors of the article, to try and get in touch with me on Friday. And of course, I just wasn't available. Obviously, I would have spoken to him without any question had this been the case. Although I have to say, I've never, ever had any contact with the Sunday Times ever before. It would have been a total surprise to me that they were actually contacting me, because they've done absolutely nothing over the Holly Gregg case and nothing at all to expose the breaches of the law by the SNP government, which any decent, confident journalist would have done a long time ago. They did try, but obviously, foolishly, they went ahead with the article without speaking to me. I mean, they had no idea where I was. I could have been anywhere, you know. And to try to contact me on Friday about an article was going out on Sunday, one of such grave ramifications, seemed to be fairly irresponsible in itself. What they would have found, of course, what they're trying to do is to undermine Chief Constable Mike Veal, who, to my mind, is an excellent peace officer, showing courage and real commitment to his sworn duty to deal with people in a fair way, irrespective of how important they are, how important they may think they are.
It's really important, so, this, isn't it? That Mike Veal, just for our listeners, he's the Wiltshire constable who was given the job of looking into the Heath allegations that Robert is referring to there. And what provoked the Sunday Times article is undoubtedly a little preview of Mike Veal's report, which suggested last week that Mike Veal believes that because there are half a dozen at least witness accounts about Heath that are incredibly similar, he's taking the position that the accusations are credible.
Yes, well, obviously, we don't know what he will say until the 5th of October, so I wouldn't want to read too much into matters at the moment, other than the fact there seems to be an ongoing attempt to smear the Chief Constable before the report comes out. And I think one would have to say, if Sir Edward's supporters believe that he is entirely innocent of all the charges or all the allegations made against him, and he's of impeccable character and so forth, I'm very surprised that there's been this campaign by certain individuals, certain politicians, including James Gray, the MP, and Lord Armstrong in the House of Lords, to undermine and even threaten the Chief Constable. If they thought that Sir Edward had done nothing wrong, surely they would welcome a proper investigation. Yes. Seeing there's been so much speculation about him over the years, they'd be saying, good, let's bring it on. If he's done nothing wrong, he'll be exonerated, and that will be the end of it. So I'm quite concerned about why they would all the time try to undermine the Chief Constable.
You know what's interesting to me, Robert? I think when they first started attacking Mike Veal, and the attacks on Veal have been going on for a while, I suggested, I certainly don't want any impingement on press freedom, but I did suggest that some of the papers are coming perilously close to perverting the course of justice by saying some of the things they're saying while there's an ongoing inquiry. Yes. It's quite staggering. Can I ask you this? The Sunday Times hinted that you'd had more than one conversation with Mike Veal, that you'd had a bit of a chat with him. Were they right? Okay. And how did that come about?
I haven't actually had a chat with Chief Constable Veal, but I have been in regular contact with him. It is perfectly true. But what I should just say, first of all, about the evidence that they were claiming that I'd given to him, because of the Holly Gregg case, they were trying to claim that any evidence that I gave to him must be tainted or unreliable. Well, obviously, it's complete nonsense about the Holly Gregg, about the fraudulent allegations anyway, but we'll talk about that later. But that was what they were trying to do. However, had they spoken to me before going into print, they would have realised that the information that I passed to Chief Constable Veal was not of my research at all. I've had no contact with anyone who's made allegations, personally with anyone who's made allegations against Sir Edward, and I don't know who has made allegations against him. All I have done is passed over, relayed to them, expert witness evidence from an impeccable source, from an expert who is perhaps a little old and frail and can't deal with these things as well as she might have done. But that's all I've done. So it wasn't my evidence, not researched by me. I was just the postman or the messenger, that's all, which obviously completely undermines the thrust of the whole article before we talk about other issues.
Of course it does, because the article is so cleverly written. It implies that you've been feeding information about Heath to Veal, as you just said there, and you haven't been doing anything of the sort. There's no doubt about that. We will, of course, talk about Holly Gregg, Robert. We've got pretty much time as we want up to the end of the programme.
Yes.
David has done, it's been a long time now since we've talked at length about the allegations around Heath and around politicians here in the UK. Yes. Through your exposure to what happened to Holly Gregg and your attempts to get justice for her, you've obviously come into contact, again, it must be said, not victims of Heath, but you've gained a bit of an understanding of the story and the accusations made against him. Do you want to give our audience a kind of an idea of the gravity of the accusations that have been made against Edward Heath?
Well, it's probably best if I don't do that until the Chief Constable makes his statement now. It's going to be in about a week or so's time. And for obvious reasons, I perhaps would be unwise for me to go into too much detail, because obviously that is a matter of police confidentiality. All I would say is they are substantive. I would not have passed over the information had it not come from an extremely reliable source, and that there were more, shall we say, more than one totally independent allegations against Sir Edward.
Yeah, and of course, we spoke today, didn't we, about David Publishing back in the mid to late 1990s. Yes. The stories of some of these people. It's been a long road for those people. You know, to put a human face on it, Robert, what must they think, these people, when they're getting to the stage when they think, finally, we're being taken seriously, finally, we're being believed? Because as you and I have seen in the last 2 years particularly, the entire UK media, in absolute totality, has tried to paint allegations about Heath and about anybody else as the stuff of fantasy and the stuff of nonsense.
Yes, well, we got all this. It was all fantasy about Jimmy Savile, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's all fantasy about Cyril Smith. What was the truth of it? And, of course, it doesn't just end with sexual abuse of children. We see these enormous propaganda efforts all the time to discredit people who are genuine victims or are genuinely to be seriously considered. And I said, it isn't just to do with this. Let's just take into account the Hillsborough situation, in which the authorities, the government, the police, spent years and years and years smearing the entire population of a great British city, Liverpool. And it was all lies. It was to cover up police, in this case, not actually corruption to begin with, but serious blunders by the police, and tried to blame the people of Liverpool for the terrible tragedy. It was lies. And it took nearly 30 years to put that right. So we're talking about people who will lie and lie and lie again in order to cover their backs and their sort of pals in the, shall we call it, the untouchable magic circle.
It's brilliant you mention Hillsborough as an example, and there's been other things happen in this country over the years as well that have been covered up. Grave miscarriages of justice, Guildford, Birmingham. We could be here all day talking about these things.
Sure we could, yes.
And yet, the impression I get, Robert, is when the subject of ritual abuse by Heath or others comes up in, I don't want to say civilised society, but amongst people who, you know, they've got half a brain, you know, they're pretty together, pretty level-headed people. They absolutely reject it out of hand as something that couldn't possibly have happened. It's complete. This has to. That's the impression I get, that the establishment drive is working.
Well, these people are factually wrong, of course, because as far as Satanist ritual abuse is concerned, there have been many, many cases where it has been proven. There have been convictions over this. Many, many cases. And so these people are talking complete nonsense. And, you know, there are just so many reasons why that is the case. We saw you may recall Barbara, a certain individual called Barbara Hewson, who came on television on Channel 4 News a few years ago with Krishna Gunamurthy, interviewed her about the Savile case. And he brought up the question of Satanist ritual abuse. And Ms. Hewson smirked and said, oh, it doesn't happen. It doesn't occur. There's no such thing, which is absolute drivel, nonsense. And she knew it to be nonsense.
These are the kind of people
who are given airtime, you know, on the mainstream media. You know, it's difficult for you and I to don't get airtime to talk on the mainstream media, but they will talk to people like this who are, I would describe as SRA enablers, who try to protect the people who, I have to say, commit the most horrifying crimes that you could possibly imagine. I've heard it from Holly. In the course of the past few years, as you say, I get approached by all sorts of other people, and the stories I've heard are appalling. And I'll perhaps go into that a little bit without going into too much detail, because I'm afraid it would sicken the listeners if they really had to hear exactly what these people are up to.
You're making a good point there. We might be talking about things that are not for the ears of younger listeners. And if you do have youngsters who understand these terms and understand these words, maybe you should listen to the podcast later on.
They're too horrible, really. Yeah. I'm going to give perhaps one example in a little while, perhaps not just now, but a little bit further into our discussion. But things are, you know, they really are awful. But I would just make one point, and I'd like all the listeners to remember what I have to say, because I do mean every word of this. Many years ago, when I was a young man, I had a workmate, a friend, quite a bit older than me, who was a Jewish gentleman, and he had been in Dachau and had made a remarkable escape from this horrific Nazi concentration camp. And once, just once only, he described what he had seen in that camp, the things that went on. And of course, we've all seen pictures, we've all read about these things, we've seen some of these awful pictures from the concentration camps, the sickness hall. And people here in Britain are saying, oh, well, that's the Nazis. That happened in Germany. Nothing like
couldn't
that
happen here.
I'm going to tell you listeners now, with my hand on my heart on this one, the things that I have heard from so many victims of Satanist ritual abuse are every bit as evil as what the Nazis were doing in the war. Every bit as evil. And these people are doing, they're not doing it as perhaps the concentration camp guards might have claimed, oh, we were just under orders, we were frightened ourselves, if we didn't do as we were told, what would happen to us and our families? These people are doing these horrible things for pleasure. Not only are they doing it, but I have no doubt that the government, the police and the intelligence services know all about it and are allowing these terrible crimes to take place in our country. It shames every one of us that no action is taken to actually do anything about this. It is absolutely appalling. And it also means, apart from all the suffering that takes place from the poor victims, it also means this country has no moral authority to criticise other countries over their human rights. So the next time that the Prime Minister wants to attack Turkey or China or North Korea, even North Korea, about human rights issues, she should think about what's going on in this country and the efforts to cover it up at all costs.
Absolutely. Let me just do a quick reminder to our listeners. Robert Green is live on the line from Warrington. You know all about Robert if you've been following his story over the years, through Robert himself, through the pages of davidicke.com, and as I said elsewhere. It's good to have him back on talking about this. The Sunday Times did a hatchet job on Robert over the weekend, and they referenced the fact that Chief Constable Mike Veal of Wiltshire Police, who's heading up the investigation into accusations made against former Prime Minister Edward Heath, the Sunday Times referenced the fact that Constable Veal had been in touch with Robert as evidence that the inquiry is tainted somehow because of Robert's involvement with Holly Gregg, which we will talk about shortly. A lot of comments coming in, not only on Twitter but on email as well, about the media and about how, you know, I've been involved in radio one way or another for years, and we're looking at presenters who are not even trying to disguise or to even pretend there's any level of objectivity. You have national radio presenters almost on a weekly basis deriding and mocking and saying this is all an absolute fantasy, it's madness. And of course we know it isn't, and you've talked about it, Robert. I suppose this is why your next door neighbour and the woman across the street, they can't buy into it, because they're getting told day in, day out, it's nonsense, it's fantasy. A lot of people are tweeting about that.
They do, and obviously it's something I would like to bring to people's attention, because there's all sorts of very quite senior people you would normally trust come out with this nonsense. And that's the theory of this false memory syndrome, which you probably heard about, know, Richie, that these children sort of, they imagine all these things and make these things up, particularly when ritual abuse, Satanist ritual abuse, and perhaps other forms of ritual abuse are mentioned. In fact, in the case of Satanist ritual abuse, by the fact that it is ritual abuse, the type of tortures and all the other awful things don't vary too much from one case to another, or even from one country to another. And many of the children who come forward trying to explain these things as best they can are often quite young children, perhaps 3, 4, 5 years old. Now, unless the people who propagate this false memory syndrome nonsense can actually tell us that there is an international conspiracy of toddlers taking place, then what they're saying is complete and utter rubbish. And it is there. They bring this out time after time again in order to cover for these horrific crimes. Believe me, ladies and gentlemen, it is absolutely nonsense.
We've heard from people all over the world on this programme. We've heard from psychotherapists like Sandra Fecht, who had nothing to gain by saying that through her treating sex abuse victims over the years, she started hearing these stories. She's an honest woman with integrity, wasn't looking for any of this. It landed in, you know, on her doorstep. Fiona Barnett in Australia. We've spoken to people all over the world, no connection whatsoever. And their stories are sometimes word perfect in terms of some of the things that go on at these I hate to use the word as benign as events, because they're not events, they are gatherings where unspeakable things are done to children. So it's untenable to say it's false memory.
They're done to children, Richie, and I think people should not remember, this isn't mentioned quite often enough, we're a nation of animal lovers. I'm glad we're a nation of animal lovers. I think it's something to be proud of. The most common types of abuse, for obvious reasons, is against animals. Torture, mutilation, and sacrifice. Dogs, cats, horses, cattle. This is what these people also do, because obviously it's a lot safer to do these terrible things to an animal than it is to a child or a vulnerable adult. So people shouldn't forget that. These people do terrible things against animals. And if the truth came out and the press started reporting this as they should do, there would be a sense of outrage that this country has never experienced before.
I just want to make a point on that. Robert Greene is our guest tonight, folks. You really need to be paying attention to what Robert Greene is telling you in this country. It's not just going on here, it's going on everywhere. Robert, Natalie Rowe, the former escort, was on this programme a couple of times. And she told me, and again, no reason to lie, her story was told in a manner, I mean, you and I have had a lot of radio experience. We know when somebody's making something up or when they are repeating a story.
You do get a feeling about
it. You get a feeling for it, don't you? You know, you've been in this seat that I'm in now, so you know this. Natalie Rose said to me that one of the things that George Osborne and his pals, and again, if you've got children, please don't let them listen to this. You know, I'm going to give you 3 seconds. Turn it off if you've got a child who can understand these terms. They used to get baby pigeons, and we would say squab. So, you know, any baby animal is all the more beautiful because of its infancy, because it's young, it's cute and all that. And they would insert a baby pigeon into the rectum of somebody for shits and giggles, as they say, until the bird expires. Who does that? Who does that, Robert? What psychopath puts a defenceless animal in that situation until it dies and thinks it's a good laugh?
Yes. This is consistent with the kind of things that I've heard of course, when we're talking about creatures and poor animals and so forth. No one should be under any illusions. We're not just talking about people who behave badly or go over the top and all the rest of it. We are dealing with pure evil here. It is pure evil. There's no other word for it.
Do you want to, because we've talked about the media and how the media say it's all a nonsense, shall we play the Tim Fortescue insert, or do you want to play that later?
Oh, yes. I'll just introduce, perhaps I should just say a few words before you do play.
Please
it.
Do, my
it's
friend.
Important to
Please
you.
Do.
When I've been dealing with Chief Constable Veal, I drew his attention very early on to this, when people were saying, oh, Edward Heath, you know, it's terrible, this poor man, he's passed away, and they're telling us terrible things about him, all these insinuations, isn't it disgraceful, look at all the money that it's costing and all the rest of it, some blah, 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 on and on and on. Then, anyway, they were conveniently overlooking one fact. And that was Tim Fortescue in Waltham. And I have to say, this, in my opinion, is the most astonishing political interview that I've ever seen on British television. 1995, and you can still see this, ladies and gentlemen, BBC TV interviewed Tim Fortescue, who was chief whip to Sir Edward Heath at the time when he was in power between 1970 to 74 inclusive. And what Mr. Fortescue said, and you can look at this for yourself, well, you're going to play it in just a few minutes, but what Mr. Fortescue said was that they had problems as chief whip. People came to, MPs came through with all kinds of problems, including problems with little boys. And you'll hear it for yourself in a second. And what did the government do? What did the Heath government do? They concealed this information about what were almost certainly serious crimes against children from the police for political gain. All they wanted to do was to be able to protect the people who'd made these admissions so that they could be controlled and would vote exactly as the government wanted them to. It's a little while since I've heard the full bit from Mr. Fortescue, but I think what is most chilling is that, A, he makes no sign of remorse or any thought about the horrors that the poor victims had to face. And secondly, there doesn't seem to be anything to say that they told informed these people they had to desist from carrying on with the crimes. Obviously, the crimes of sexually abusing children is not just one occasion. The people who do it tend to do it over and over and over again. It's just part of their nature. But yes, so obviously, whatever the situation with Mr. Heath, whether he's exonerated personally, which is possible, of course, the allegations against him, we really don't know what Chief Constable Beale has to say. I've obviously had quite a bit of contact with him, but it's obviously not proper for me to know. I have absolutely no idea what his final report will contain. But for one thing for sure is Sir Edward Heath and all the ministers who were there at the time, which I have to say also involves Margaret Thatcher, were all, if we look at cabinet responsibility, were all guilty of covering up the appalling or the existence of appalling crimes from the police. This is a terrible thing. And Mr. Heath, even if he's personally found not to have behaved badly himself, is certainly culpable for covering up very, very serious crimes against children. That's the very least of the matters.
Let's hear the clip then. This is Tim Fortescue, as Robert said, in 1995, he was the chief whip to Edward Heath in the early 1970s. Listen to
Fortescue.
That's
right. And just to let people know, before it was played by the BBC in 1995. It was repeated again in 2014. And as a result of that, I contacted Lord Hall, who's the Director General of the BBC, and asked him if that particular programme, the tape of that programme, had been handed over to the Independent Inquiry into Child Sexual Abuse. And he replied that yes, it had, in 2014. So they've had it for 3 years.
They've had it for three years.
The Conservative MPs, they were victims of Conservative MPs, and the Prime Minister, Theresa May, has yet to make a public apology to all the people who have suffered so badly at the hands of Conservative MPs.
Let's hear Tim Fortescue, as Robert Green rightly said, from the BBC documentary, Westminster Secret Service. Listen to this again. It's not the first time I've played it. It doesn't get any more devastating than this.
Anyone with any sense who was in trouble would come to the whips and tell them the truth and say, "Now this, I'm in a jam. Can you help?" It might be debt. It might be scandal involving small boys, or any kind of scandal which a member seemed likely to be mixed up in. They'd come and ask if we could help, and if we could, we did. And we would do everything we can, because we would store up brownie points. That sounds a pretty nasty reason, but it's one of the reasons. Is if we can get a chap out of trouble, then he'll do as we ask forevermore.
He'll do as we ask forevermore. You said it was a chilling bit of audio.
Yes.
It doesn't get any more chilling, does it?
No, it doesn't. Each time you hear it, you think, could this have really happened on TV? And, you know, it's just a staggering. But, of course, Mr. Fortescue didn't seem to feel too badly. He said it seemed to have a bit nasty, but that's about as far as it went. It's absolutely appalling. It's government by blackmail.
When I first came across that clip, two things struck me. One, as you said, that as long as the MP voted whichever which way they wanted him to vote, Fortescue was okay with some young boy getting raped 2 or 3 days later. He didn't care, number one. But number two, Fortescue is dead now, but obviously he was alive when he recorded that. He wouldn't have recorded it if he wasn't alive. So why wasn't he interviewed under caution by the police? Mr. Fortescue, it seems like you've owned up to monumental crimes on national television. We'd like to see you down at the station there, pal.
Yes.
But it didn't happen.
No. The only other thing I can just say about this, because I've been obviously in contact with other people in the mainstream, one of the mainstream people, of course, is the Daily Mail. And I did get a letter on behalf of the editor-in-chief, Paul Dacre, once I'd brought this to the attention of the Daily Mail. And he said, he actually put in writing that had Fortescue died in 2008, and the Mail said, the editor-in-chief of the Mail, Paul Dacre, said that he would definitely, the paper would definitely have interviewed Tim Fortescue had he been alive over what he had said in 1995.
They only had 13 years to do it.
Yes, you might well argue that.
You know, they would have seen
no
that.
One reads wants to bring. The people who I think is going to be most upset about this, more than anybody else, are the bulk of the people who have voted Conservative, who voted Conservative in the last election. Now, I believe that the people of all the main parties, whether it's the Conservatives, Lib Dems, Labour, UKIP, or the major parties, the bulk of the people who vote for them are thoroughly decent people, whether they're right, centre, left, it doesn't matter. They're fundamentally decent people. And I think the people who voted for the Conservative Party would be absolutely aghast if this was brought up again, and they know how much respect various Conservative governments under John Major, David Cameron, and now Theresa May have ignored this, tried to keep it from the people, and of course, worst of all, have no attempt to apologise for the people who must have suffered horrendous nightmares as a result of what happened. Because you and I think, both know that I've certainly listened to rape victims talking about what happened. In fact, in the case of Holly, 3.5 hours talking about 22 people who had sexually abused her. And once you hear that, you can never forget it. But the Conservative government don't give a damn about this. It is quite clear when the child abuse inquiry was set up as a result of Savile being exposed, of course. Theresa May, then Home Secretary, actually made a point of, I hate child sexual abuse. That's what she said. Well, obviously she doesn't hate it enough, otherwise she'd have done something about it by now.
Well, she should be in prison because she appointed people to head up that inquiry who were ringers. They were known.
Well, of course, they could have, especially the first two, of course, Elizabeth Butler-Sloss and Fiona Wolf.
Yeah, Wolf
you could Sloss. Hardly, appoint any less appropriate people than those two. And then, of course, we had the third one, who we don't know if it was a sort of, we don't know too much about her personal integrity or anything like that, but the lady from New Zealand, Lowell Goddard. You know, it's very odd that she was appointed and then she suddenly went. We don't know the full reason. I've heard a few rumours about it that she was trying to do a job properly, but I don't know any more than that and was blocked from doing it. Whether that is true or not, I have no idea. But she said, oh, well, she's going back because she's too far away from home. She's come all the way from New Zealand. Now, I would hope that Theresa May has a fair idea about where New Zealand is on the map.
Yeah.
Because when she appointed her, she should have realised that
Absolutely.
Could be a problem at some point.
Absolutely. Robert, we're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, I want you to have a think about this during the break. The break is only 3 minutes. You might grab yourself a glass of water if you want or a cup of tea.
Yes.
But have a think about this. This won't be new to you, of course. For some of our listeners, it might be. I got around over the years as a young man, lived in different places. And some years ago, long before I ever heard about satanic abuse, ritual abuse, long before it ever entered my head, I got to know somebody in London quite well, whose name I won't mention. And he went to a boarding school, one of these £15,000 a year jobs for the rich and the powerful. And he's a really nice guy. He's a journalist these days. And he said to me, Richie, dorm life at these very, very expensive boarding schools. Dorm life, he said, is full of, he used the word epidemic, of ritual humiliation for young boys in you know, when they're 13 or 14, when 12, 13, when they first come into the secondary school, boarding school. Ritual humiliation that often has a sexual undertone or overtone to it. And he said, Richie, I know this to be the case at a lot of these private boarding schools that are very expensive. Boys are introduced to humiliation, sexual humiliation, performing sexual acts. And I never, obviously you're disgusted by that. You know, when you hear it, you think, Jesus Christ, thank God I never went to a place like that.
Yes, the first thing you think, right?
But then years later, you're reading The Biggest Secret by David Icke and that, and you start to wonder, now I'm not trying to excuse anybody who goes on to commit sexual abuse, no chance, I'm not trying to do that. But I'm wondering about that, and I want you to think about that and give me an answer to that when we come back from the break, if that's okay. Robert Green is going to stay with us. It's exactly 10 minutes past the hour. This is your Richie Allen Show. It's yours on davidicke.com, Fab Radio 2 and TuneIn Radio. When we come back, Robert will talk about that, about how this sort of behaviour seems to be attached to the wealthy, the so-called ruling classes. Then we'll talk a bit about Holly Gregg as well and more. Robert Green, our guest, this Wednesday, September 27th, 2017.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Is your mind full of ideas, yet you struggle to put them down on paper? Characters with no home, unfinished concepts that you always wanted to finalise, yet lacked knowledge and drive to complete? The Creative Writing Course from Creative Imaginings may be the long-awaited answer. Designed to help you finish your masterpiece with better language techniques, detailed study of the character, plotted suspense chain, and valuable information to get published. Don't delay your creation. Sign up today. Email Sue on nassusproductions@gmail.com.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever.
Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with davidicke.com.
Got a very courageous guest on the programme tonight, Robert Green. You know all about Robert, of course, in the case of Holly Gregg, who was abused by a gang in Aberdeen. Very well connected people, very well known people. Robert fought and fought and fought to have the people who abused her brought to justice. He was jailed twice. Wrongfully, well, it goes without saying, wrongfully. Last weekend, the Sunday Times did a hit piece on the Chief Constable of Wiltshire Police, Mike Veal, who's heading up the investigation into Edward Heath. But they also did a hit piece on Robert Green. Robert was in touch with Mike Veal. Constable Mike Veal never heard the Tim Fortescue clip, wouldn't have known of it unless Robert had given it to him. Robert is staying with us for the rest of the programme. Just before he comes back in, I better read some of the tweets. Patrick Garrett says, Richie, what jumps out to me every time you played the Fortescue clip is that small boys was the second item on the list. Regards, says Pat. That's how
insignificant, Pat is suggesting that Fortescue saw the young boys, he saw them as being insignificant. Gojira tweets, fox hunting is a very public sacrifice slash ritual, wiping the blood on kids' faces to desensitise them to it, says Gojira as well. And Paul Jackson tweets, very interesting this, Paul tweets, in recent interviews with Harry and William, they have said, or they did say in the interviews, their mother, Diana, told them, when you grow up, or when you are growing up, be as naughty as you like, but don't get caught. What did that mean? And Peter McTwoWheels tweets, I've never forgotten the look of pleasure on their faces. He's talking, Peter, about very cruel things done to animals. He witnessed an adult kill a beautiful blackbird while grinning, and he saw a boy spearing a hedgehog for fun. Robert Green is our guest. Robert, thanks for staying with us.
Thank you.
The private school, the boarding school, and all these stories. There's been a number of books written by men and women, memoirs, diaries of their lives, and they often hint in these books at very, very, very sinister things going on at these boarding schools. Is there a link to that, do you think, and what we've seen? We talked about, obviously, George Osborne and the baby pigeons and stuff. What do you think, Robert?
Well, it's a tricky one because obviously I'm not really don't have the wealth of information psychologically to make any worthwhile comment on that. But I would, I think, go along with what you're probably inferring on this, that if children are treated like that in an area in boarding schools, away from their parents and so forth, I would say that there's a real risk that they become desensitized about cruel sexual practices. And as they grow up, I can't imagine, I mean, I must say, if that is how they are treated and the way things are that going on at boarding schools, and they start to grow up, it's very difficult to imagine that that does not have a profound effect on the way they think about cruelty, torture, sex, and all the rest of it. I can't believe that it doesn't have a very negative effect on the people who are involved in this type of thing. That's what I can say, but I'm not qualified to make any profound opinion on it.
Neither am I. It's a fair point, Robert. Thank you. Robert is going to talk. I want to put this a comment to Robert. He won't mind, of course, because he's open. Robert, he's open to talk about his experiences with Holly Gregg. I've looked at this very from every angle for years, and I believe Holly Gregg. I believe Robert. I really do, and I make no apologies for that. But I do know a lot of the people who've gone after Robert are trolls, and they are people who want to cover up what happened. But there are other people who are not trolls and who don't want to cover it up. And they've said over the years, and one or two said to me today, oh, you have Robert on, I bet you won't have the courage to tell him that we think that he handled it wrong, that maybe he shouldn't have believed Holly's mum, and that maybe Robert might have put innocent people in harm's way. And people said, no, you won't say that, Robert. They said, you won't say that to him, Richie. I said, well, of course. It's an open programme. And
I'll be glad to answer that.
I know you're going to be glad to answer that. And I've just got to reiterate, you know, I can't hide behind pretending to be objective about this particular story, because I'm not, because I believe you. I'm not going to lie and say I am objective. But some, you know, decent people are like, I'm not sure about it, Richie. And, you know, Robert might have put innocent people in harm's way by naming people. Over to you. I'm not going to interrupt you. When you hear that, what do you think and what do you say?
Well, I think there's a very simple answer to that, because people clearly haven't been listening to what I've been saying, if they didn't say that. Because obviously, it is not, when we talk about being objective, no one could be more objective than me about this. Everything I've done on the Holly Gregg case is as a result of the expert witness opinion on Holly. I didn't know Holly and Anne before I was asked to help put to them at all. Everything I've done, I took a totally neutral, objective point of view on this. I didn't know whether Holly was telling the truth or whether she wasn't. I didn't know whether her mother was telling the truth or wasn't. I had no idea. But what I based it on was the fact that so many experts, medically and psychologically, had interviewed, particularly Holly, her mother to a certain extent, but obviously mainly Holly as the victim, And they all came to the same conclusion. She was a victim of sexual abuse. And this came from some of the most eminent people in Scotland. Dr. Jack Boyle, of course, eminent psychiatrist, yeah. Who I would have to say, act psychologist, but I would have to say, I repeat something of general information that was on the report that he made of about Holly, which is in the public domain. And he said that this is one of the biggest experts in the whole of the UK, not just in Scotland, and his opinion is used in many cases throughout the land over issues like this. And what he had to say, and I'd like everybody to remember this, who when you hear about sexual abuse of children, the attempts to actually smear and undermine the children and perhaps the mother, Dr. Boyle said that, in general, research shows that children do not make up false stories of sexual abuse. Do not make up false stories of sexual abuse. That is the word of the leading expert. And he goes on to say that the perpetrator, in all cases, has enormous motivation to blame the child for not understanding normal sexual behavior or has been primed by mother. This is the kind of thing that goes on. And this is not my words. I'm not qualified to have that opinion. But I go on the words of a man like Dr. Boyle and other experts in the case, such as Dr. Eva Harding, Dr. Francis Kelly, Dr. Paul Carter, Ruth Beckman at the Down Syndrome Association, and also the chief constable of Scotland at the time, Andrew Brown, QPM, whose officers said that everyone who'd been in contact with Holly believed her to be a truthful witness, a competent witness, and an entirely innocent victim, not an alleged victim. These are the words of the experts. These are the words I went on about. So when people say, oh, Robert shouldn't have believed all this, not question me believing it. It's what I believe the experts on this. I have no idea. I would have no idea whether Anne or Holly was telling the truth or not. No idea at all. I only took the case on because of the expert witness evidence supporting Holly. And don't anybody forget, on the basis of the expert witness evidence, that was placed before the panel of the Criminal Injuries Compensation Authority, who decided to award Holly damages because they regarded the evidence as so important and so compelling that it justified the payment of public funds to her as a genuine victim. Furthermore, I'll go on to talk about, wasn't this a problem with the innocent people? I made statements because of course problems. Well, the point is, I didn't want to do that. I wanted the police to investigate. There was there should never be any need for me to take the action that I did. But the police refused to actually question any of the people named by a thoroughly reliable witness, even mentioned in a letter by the chief constable himself. And the police who were dealing with the case years afterwards wouldn't even question any of the people concerned. They would not take their computers and have a look at them. And this was confirmed on oath at my trial by the investigating officer who had interviewed Holly in my presence, DC Lisa Jane Evans. That is a fact. She confessed to that under oath.
You couldn't believe this at the time, Robert. I mean, I remember speaking to you about this earlier in the year, and I remember hearing you speak with other people. You had all this, yes. You had all this compelling, watertight expert witness testimony to say that Holly was telling the truth. This was real. All the evidence was there. These people had to be looked at this stage, because you had no exposure to this at this stage. You just couldn't believe that they wouldn't go and question these people under caution or investigate.
That's all I wanted. You know, people go on about me wanting to have people convicted. I have no position to have them convicted. All I asked for the police to do an adequate investigation, which would mean questioning the people who had been named by a totally reliable witness, believed by the police as such, believed as a victim, and to do any other actions such as checking the computers, which is often the case when sort of rings are being named, because it often shows that they've got connections with each other, perhaps connections with other people outside the ring. So it's quite clear that the police, for whatever reason, well, we do know the reason now because we've learned it a little bit later on, the police were not in a position where they wanted to make any investigators at all, because they did not want, somebody did not want to see what might come out.
Absolutely.
If they did question the perpetrators. And don't forget, there were seven other victims seen by Holly to have suffered as well.
Do you know what's important, Robert? Do you know what's important to mention? When people got in touch with me today, some of them genuine, of course, the reason why they're asking these questions is because of the farcical journalism of the Sunday Times when they put out this story, oh, Robert is unstable. But they neglect to put all of this factual, documented, in the public domain evidence in their stories. And of course, yes. If they did that, you know, Mary or Billy, who are saying, Richie, ask him now because we're not sure about him, they would say, Jesus, they had all this evidence, they had all this information, and they didn't investigate those men.
Yeah.
But they don't know about this, you see.
Well, they don't. You see, the point is, Richard, I've always made, and this is why people have just not been listening to what I've been saying all along or reading the things that I've written, is the fact that if the police had done the proper investigations, as they should in any case where, even if it's an adult woman complains about a rape, that she'd been raped and names the people that she claims have raped, the very least the police will do is to go and talk to the people who've been named, obviously. It may be right, it might be wrong, but they go and talk to them. In this case, the police didn't even talk to them. And that is the point. And my point being is that if the police had done their job and checked, even despite all the strength of the evidence, and said, look, you know, whatever the situation, very sorry, but we don't think we can take this any further. We've looked at the evidence. We don't think we can get a conviction out of this. We don't think it's strong enough, blah, blah, blah. If they'd said this, I would have walked away. There's nothing I could do.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, there's lots of cases, I'm sure, where the police are certain that the people concerned are guilty of the crimes, but they know that if it went to court, they couldn't possibly secure a conviction, and so they have to let it go. And I would have taken it in that way. I've done my best. The police have done the investigation that I've asked them to do. They found they can't continue with the case, so I would have just disappeared off the radar completely.
But they didn't pick up a pencil. They didn't pick up a pencil. Can I just share this with you? I don't know if you know this. You won't, yes. Of course, know this, because we've not spoken since January. A few months ago, an amazing young woman came up here to see me. I'm not going to give any clues as to who she is. And I mean, she's an amazing woman. And she gave me documents that show very strong circumstantial evidence. Now, that sounds like a contradiction in terms. And I know there will be legal eagles out there saying, you can't say that, Richie, it's wrong. She gave me enough for the police to conduct a serious investigation, but they didn't. She was able to show me that her former partner, the father of her child, was not only abusing her child, but was allowing others to abuse the same child as well. And when this was reported, she's now not able to see the child. You know how this goes, right? Child protection people come in. She's prevented from seeing her flesh and blood that she carried in her womb. And she's absolutely devastated by this. She's doing everything she can to try and get access to her child again. She gave me enough, Robert, and I'm a skeptic, and I know you're a skeptic as well. She gave me enough. Now, of course, I'm not a policeman. I'm not a detective. I don't have that training. But there was enough there to say, well, this is deadly serious there. Medical evidence she gave me that the child had been buggered, effectively. Yeah. And, of course, you won't be surprised, and you probably have an idea of who I'm talking about. That this is the way it goes, right? Yes. So the police don't investigate, you're telling lies, or there's something else going on there, you can't see your child anymore. Because everything must lead to, David says, the spider's web. All of these are strands that lead into the wider conspiracy. Yes. That's why mothers are being called lawyers and prevented from seeing their children. What do you think?
Yes, I think that's entirely true. What you've described is something I've heard over and over and over again over the years I've been dealing with this. Don't forget that the mother, it's usually the mother, but it could be the father, but generally the mother, when they hear these terrible things that happen to their children, they have a duty to come forward and tell the police.
Yes.
It's not just the fact that they want to protect the children, which any mother would want to do, you would expect, but they have to come forward. They know of terrible crimes have been committed that quite clearly have not happened to their own children, but could well be committed against other children. And so they have a duty to come forward. What happens when they do come forward? Then they're ruthlessly persecuted. And because they have come forward and made a complaint, they then frequently have their children taken away from them, which is cruel on them. And it's also an example to other mothers who have faced this situation. Once they hear about this, their children may have sort of reported abuse and so forth, possibly from a family member, they will actually think twice about going to the police. They think, oh, this is terrible. Well, what can I do? If I come forward, they will attack me and persecute me and take the children away for allegedly making a false complaint. So this is what we're up against. And as I mentioned earlier, we are dealing with pure evil in this country. It is an absolute disgrace. Now, just briefly, I mentioned one or two things about the Holly Gregg case and some of the connections. One of the most alarming issues that I've come across, certainly having going up into Aberdeen and being with a lot of prisoners there who, generally speaking, were a far better calibre of people than the people who are running Scotland, certainly more trustworthy and decent people than Alex Salmond and Nicola Sturgeon, for a start. But quite apart from that, Aberdeenshire seems to be in the grip of, certainly I've experienced it, I've talked to other people, in the grip of a very sinister group of people, which include police officers, social services, and certain members of the judiciary. And it has to be remembered that this is an area with a relatively small population. The only city of any size is Aberdeen, which isn't really a big city. It's got about population about 210,000. But the area around is quite sparse. And quite apart from Holly's case, these are the things that have gone on over the last few years in that area, all of which are extremely suspicious. One of which, of course, is the death of Holly's beloved uncle in very suspicious circumstances. But quite apart from that, separate to that, was the murder of Claire Webster, which again was being covered up by the Scottish police at that time. She was found in a crashed car, and it looked like a suicide or an accident. And the person who should have been the suspect was her husband, Malcolm Webster. Now, what happened was that the police, as they have done with all the other cases, didn't take any action about someone who would obviously, in normal circumstances, have been a suspect. And the only reason that in the end Webster was convicted in Scotland and is now spending time in prison for the murder of his wife was that Webster was allowed to leave Scotland without any problems at all and went over to live in New Zealand. The thing is, in New Zealand, he met another woman and tried to do the same thing. It was only to do with the actions of the New Zealand police and certain members of the public, I think the sister of the woman who he tried to murder, that actually the case got referred back to Scotland. And he was finally convicted of something that he should have been convicted of at the time, had the Scottish police done their job. In the face of it, because of their failures, another woman in another country nearly lost her life because of their incompetence. So we have that case. We have the case that many people have heard about, the Doherty family, which I won't spend too much time going into all these things because we talk about Holly's case primarily and some of the other issues. The Doherty family again reported someone offering money to abuse their child, and as a result lost all four of their children as a result of reporting this. We have the case of poor Sean Ritchie, a young man of 20 years old who disappeared on Halloween night up in the northeast of Scotland. And as a result of this, the mother, who was 2 or 3 years ago, was trying very hard to find out what happened to her son. Apparently his shoes and some of his clothes were found later, but no sign of him was ever found. It was in a wooded area, the kind of area that sometimes things go on at Halloween night. And now the Scottish police are attacking the mother for wasting police time because all she wants to find out is what happened to her son. So this is what is going on at the moment. All the people who've reported things have been persecuted. Another case I'd like to mention, perhaps isn't mentioned too often, but I will mention it. There's also a devoted father up in the Aberdeen area called Malcolm Ogilvie, who's trying hard to protect his young daughter from abuse, a young daughter who's been taken away from him. So sometimes it's the fathers who are doing all the effort who are victims. Rather, it's mostly the mothers, but sometimes it's the fathers. And Malcolm as well has been treated in an abominable way by the Aberdeen establishment.
None of us can imagine what
they're going
through
in the same area which doesn't have a big population. What is going on?
And you think that the area, then it must be some sort of hotbed for this activity. It must be.
Yes, I think it's the only rational conclusion one can come to without absolute proof. It's too coincidental that all these terrible things are going on in the same area. And we do know some of the people concerned do have contacts. In fact, Malcolm Webster had contacts, proven contacts, with some of the people involved in the Holly Gregg case.
Let me just do a quick recap. Robert Green is our guest today. We know Robert through the horrendous case of Holly Gregg, the appalling abuse suffered by Holly. the paedophile ring operating there in Aberdeenshire, the efforts made to get the police to investigate that, what happened to Robert, his being sent to prison, of course, an absolute disgrace. It doesn't get any more unjust than that. It's great to have him back on the programme. We're talking a lot lately about Edward Heath and the investigation into him by Constable Mike Veal, Chief Constable Mike Veal from Wiltshire Police. It's been announced, or it's been leaked, not leaked, but it's out there in the public domain that Mike Veal believes having, I presumably exhaustively researched this over the last a couple of years, that the stories about Heath are credible. And yes, it's vital for those who are carrying out this on a daily basis, who are doing this to children, that the UK public don't learn that there's any truth to the claims against Edward Heath, because it blows the lid off of everything. Do you go along with that, Robert?
Oh, very much so, very much so. And of course, I think there's one other issue to do with Chief Constable Veal and his team. All these people who are, and we've seen it in the Sunday Times, we've seen it in the Telegraph, we've seen it in by certain sections in the Mail, these efforts to, mostly conservative supporting newspapers, who are trying to undermine the Chief Constable. But another point I would make is, how can any of these people possibly know what evidence Chief Constable Veal has got? How can they know? How can they possibly know the evidence is not strong enough? How can anybody actually say that?
It's outrageous because they're not privy to it. It's which is why...
Even I don't know how much... I'm a contributor, but I have no idea about the extent of the evidence that he holds. So how can anybody else know?
And this is why some months ago we suggested here that by coming out publicly and saying that it's all a nonsense, and you articulated it brilliantly, how could they know? They wouldn't have been privy to the information. Some of these, you know, very, very famous newspapers, centuries-old publications, are guilty, in my opinion. Shouldn't say it, really. You know, they have the rights to defend themselves, of course. But it looks like perverting the course of justice.
Yes.
It can't be anything else.
And I'd like to mention another person who has, I believe, spoken inappropriately on this. And this is a man who's widely respected in journalism. And I know a lot of people have a very high regard for him. And I tend to agree with a lot of his opinions. But he's a man called Charles Moore. I think he's now editor of The Spectator, and was a former editor of the Daily Telegraph. And he, when all this has been going on, and actually he's obviously referred to the Heath case, talk about how bad it is for our institutions. It's undermining our institutions to have all these investigations and so forth.
Wow.
Now, this means that anybody who works in the institutions could commit any crime they want, and they shouldn't be looked at because they work in the institutions. Now, one general view I would like, again, people to just bear in mind is that we talk about institutions, the court, the police, the parliament, all the rest of it. Now, all of these institutions are entirely made up of fallible human beings like you and me. They probably means that they're probably no better than the rest of us, and I suspect in some cases quite a lot worse. So why do we let these people dictate to us? Why do we let people who are no better than themselves, and often not better qualified to look at matters, dictate to us how we should think and what we should do? It doesn't make any sense, does it?
It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. I've just had a tweet from David Mortimer at UK Fathers on Twitter. David sent the article from the Daily Mail that said that 25,000 paedophiles are downloading child porn in the UK, and the National Crime Agency is not investigating it. And you would have spoken at length about the story from about a year ago that we talked about, where in some districts in this country, people suspected of downloading images of children, police were knocking on their doors and asking them to stop.
Yes.
Not arresting them, saying to them, listen, would you stop doing that, please? Would you accept an official caution? That only lends to the idea that somebody doesn't want to investigate this stuff.
No, of course not. I quite agree. And obviously, but some people don't realise that a lot of the people who are convicted for using child pornography are actually abusers themselves, and the police know they're abusers, physical abusers, not just looking at somebody abusing children, but actually abusing it. And a lot of the time, the police, who are doing the best that they possibly can in difficult circumstances, will actually are actually able to secure a conviction on the basis of child pornography. They know pretty well for sure that they've also been abusing children, but they know that that might be very difficult and very long and very lengthy process in order to secure a conviction. So what they will do is they will go for the lesser conviction of watching it, knowing that at least the person is on the sex offenders register and then is formally known forever to the police as a possible risk. They do that, and I don't blame the police for doing this. They do not pursue the far more serious crime rather than just know that there's a lesser crime, but a lesser crime in which they can be pretty sure that they can get a conviction on. This happens a lot.
It's happening a lot. It's exactly 20 minutes to the top of the hour. Robert Green is our guest. We've got about 15 minutes, just under 15, in fact, left on this. And because it's your time, Robert, do you want to go to is there an area you want to get into for the last few minutes?
Well,
I mean, obviously the Holly Grail and where we are.
One of the things I would like to say, I mentioned earlier in the programme about some of the horrors of Satanist ritual abuse. And again, I think if any young people are listening, very youngish people or sensitive people, perhaps best not to listen just for three or four minutes, because I'm just going to give you one example. There are so many examples. I couldn't tell you how many things I've heard from so many people since I've been dealing with this matter for the last 8 or 9 years. But I will give you one or two, something I heard a couple of years ago, and this was from a victim of Satan's ritual abuse. And this will sicken you. This young girl was being abused from being quite a young girl by a ring, by a cult. Okay. At the age of 12, she was made pregnant. The cult forced her to carry the child. They forced her to deliver the child. She was 12 years old, and then kill the baby immediately that she'd given birth to it. It is that sick. It is that bad. And when I told you earlier on that these people are committing crimes that I think perhaps even some of the Nazis would blink at, I'm not exaggerating. Not exaggerating at all. That is what we're up against.
How do you you see, I believe that, not because I want to believe it, I believe it. How do you convince your friends and neighbours that something, because what you described there, it doesn't get any worse. That's about as depraved and as sick, as you said, a thing that anybody can do or could do or would do. How do you convince people that it's a real thing is happening?
Well, it's there for all to see. You know, people like yourself and other expert people who are real experts. I'm not a real expert in this. I've come to this very late, and people know an awful lot more about these things than I do, and many of them are professionally qualified. There's no question about it that it is really, really something that goes on all the time. In fact, I've got a report here from the Metropolitan Police, actually. And they talk here, came out this year, and it's talking about, I'll just read what the first paragraph, because I don't want to take too much time off of this, but it says, faith and belief-based child abuse, including practices around spirit possession and witchcraft, is a hidden crime, which makes it difficult to quantify in terms of magnitude. However, from our own experience and in consultation with London's communities, we know this kind of abuse is underreported. And goes on to say a lot of the things that the processes do.
Underreported.
But that comes from the Metropolitan Police. So anybody who's still going on about, I don't really believe all this, just listen to the experts, the people on the ground level who are dealing with these situations.
Now, the people who are doing this, they believe they are absolutely above the law. In fact, from what we understand and listening to you tonight and listening to David, they know they're above the law. They can do this in their minds with immunity. They don't have to worry about their collar being felt, as it were, a knock on the door. They just do it and that's it.
No, because they're protected. How could Jimmy Savile get away with doing this blatantly
for
in
years.
Front of people for 50 years? How could he do it unless he was protected? And of course, the way these people are protected is that they know too much. If they were prosecuted, they'd be able to spill a lot of names and a lot of names that everybody in this country would know about. They could give evidence. So they're protected until the day they die. And then perhaps even then, every effort is made to make sure that their reputation is not damaged in any way. And so this is what we have. This is what happens. This is the way in which things are carried on in this country.
Isn't it interesting, Robert? Isn't it interesting that former Home Secretary Leon Britton is a very senior government cabinet position. He was obviously very well known. And yet he wasn't well known enough that anybody knew that he was dying of cancer. Quite extraordinary that. I'm not being sarcastic here. Mm. I've been a journalist for many years. Nobody had any idea that Leon Britton was dying of cancer. And all of a sudden, Britton's name is coming up again. The lost dossier, it's all coming up again. And then we learn that Britton has passed away in his sleep.
Yes, yes.
I don't buy it. I've never bought it.
Obviously, we don't get too much into it to case that we're not too established. But obviously, I think one would look at the Greville Janner case as well.
Another one.
Where suddenly he's voting in the House of Lords, and then 2 weeks later,
gone.
He's got dementia and can't face charges because he's not fit to plead.
Well, that's right.
He's making a vote. He's voting in the House of Lords, I think, 2 weeks before this diagnosis
absolutely
suddenly
right.
came out.
You're right to mention that, because before he passed away mysteriously, you're absolutely right, he was collecting his £300 a day. Don't pass, go, collect your shillings, collect your wages. Mm. And was competent enough to be there. And all of a sudden we were told he was unfit to defend himself or answer or plead to a charge. And then not long after that, he's dead. He's gone.
Well, as I say, as you rightly say, he wasn't sufficiently demented to prevent him picking up his £300 a day, was he? He wasn't that stupid.
No.
But we do have, it really is an appalling state of affairs. One thing I would just go back to saying the clip, I know we've only got a few minutes left now, but I'd like to go back to this disgusting article. I have to say, we talked about journalists, some journalists who repeatedly try to undermine the testimonies of victims, especially of Satanist ritual abuse, but perhaps other abuses as well. If you look at the article, many of you have, you will see one of the people responsible for this disgusting and cowardly piece of journalism is a woman called Rosie Waterhouse. Rosie Waterhouse is one of these very people, like Barbara Hewson, who does everything to undermine the testimonies of victims. So for her to be making an attack on me is really below the belt. It's bad enough coming from anybody, but to see her name on an article attacking me is absolutely disgraceful.
Have they offered you a right of reply, Robert? Have they said to you, look, we didn't get you, but we'll give you
well,
a right of reply?
Obviously, I'm in touch with the editor. The editor of the Sunday Times is responsible. Anybody who feels badly about it, his name is Martin Ivens, Ivens. He's the editor. I've contacted him about this. I want a retraction. I want a fact that I want them to not only retract it, but to put in full the parliamentary letter for me to receive the Nobel Peace Prize, not because it's building me up, but because the author of this recommendation actually goes into great detail about the failures of the Scottish justice system in protecting Holly Gregg. Talks about Jimmy Savile and says that if Holly is telling the truth, and everybody says she's telling the truth, people who've interviewed her all say she's telling the truth, then countless other children in Scotland must be at risk given the number of people that Holly has named. So this is what we are up against, and this is quite true. Now, what has perhaps incensed me most of all about the article is not the attack on me. A lot of people feel very sorry for me, and they say, isn't it disgusting how these people can make these sort of ridiculous smears on you and so forth. What it is, it's a smear against Holly Gregg, because they talk about my false allegations. Well, they're not false allegations, and they're not my allegations. They're Holly's allegations. So these cowards, and I'll give you the names of them now. Let's make sure we know exactly what we're talking about. James Gillespie, Rosie Waterhouse, Tom Harper, and I think the deputy editor here, I understand, Caroline Wheeler. All of these four people, if they had an ounce of honour about them, they would offer their resignations right now. And if they don't offer their resignations, in my opinion, they should be dismissed by the editor, Martin Ivens. That is my view. This is so appalling. It's a cowardly attack on a young woman who has been absolutely everybody who's, all the experts who've looked at her have said that she is a definite victim of sexual abuse. And these people, they're not trying to discredit me, they're discrediting Holly's allegations. That is the truth. And these are the very same people, I'm not saying the individuals, but the very same newspapers, the Times Group, who were too scared to actually name Alex Salmond, Nicola Sturgeon and the rest for breaching 10 sections 10.1 and 21.1 of the Freedom of Information Scotland Act. And moreover, the entire Scottish Cabinet on the 11th of July 2011, which included Salmond and Sturgeon, came within 24 hours of facing the criminal prosecution of contempt of court if they had not cooperated with the Information Commissioner, Mr. Kevin Dunnion. And only one journalist had the guts to stand up to Salmond and his accomplices. And that editor, and I speak in great respect, Stephen Rayburn of the very respected legal magazine, The Firm, they were the only ones to speak out. The Times, the great Times, all their resources and fearless journalism and belief in the freedom of the press, were too scared to stand up to someone of the category of Alex Salmond. It is an absolute disgrace. And these are the things that are missing from this article. But cowardice, hypocrisy, incompetence,
the
lowest kind of journalism you can imagine.
No integrity whatsoever, because...
None whatsoever, no.
You know, it wouldn't have taken him 15, 20 minutes to get to the heart of what happened to Holly Gregg and your involvement
in that. It's been in the public domain for years.
For years.
What kind of journalists are they?
You know, well, they're the kind that will take the prestige of having a byline on the Sunday Times and will take the money and will leave at the door their ethics and their integrity and will do what they're told. And that's the sad truth of it.
The other issue that I perhaps urge people to do is to contact the Prime Minister, Theresa May, about the victims of the vote. You've heard the Tim Fortescue. Those who've been listening to the programme throughout will have heard the Tim Fortescue interview. It's time for the Prime Minister to actually apologise to those victims. Don't forget, the government are always jumping around in the case of perhaps Leon Britton and perhaps a few others, if the police decide not to go ahead, because the next thing is that they're all saying, this is terrible, Mr. Britton, and all the rest of it. It's time for the people who accused him to apologise. Apologise, apologise. Well, Mrs. May, it's time that you apologised to the victims, the people who had been sexually abused and possibly raped by Conservative MPs in the 1970 to 74 period. I have been in touch with several filmed interviews. I've said the same thing, and I'm saying it now, about the Prime Minister. It's taken me a bit of time, hard work, because nobody really wants to talk to me. But I have had several conversations with 10 Downing Street's press office, a man called Mitchell Berry. And I wanted to be fair to the Prime Minister. If there's some good reason why she won't apologise, she should tell the public why she's not going to apologise. Let's have it straight from us.
You and I know why, of course.
Yes. But Mitchell Berry, who is one of the senior people at the press office, just got rather agitated with me when I was just trying to be fair to the Prime Minister. And all he was interested in saying, who are you working for? Who are you working for? I said, it's not relevant who I'm working for. I'm just asking you a straight question. Is she going to apologise or not apologise? And if she doesn't apologise, will she give a reason why she won't be apologised? There may be some good reason that I'm not aware of. Let's give her the chance to do it. This has happened.
Your retort, of course, should be to him, who are you working for? You're supposed to be working for the taxpayers of this country.
I didn't quite get to that. I wasn't quite quick enough on the mark to do that, but it's a good point.
Robert, let's wait and see what's in Chief Constable Mike Veal's report, and I'll be really interested to hear what you have to say when you read that.
Yes, I think we have to. And again, I would repeat the point that if the supporters of Edward Heath really thought they had nothing to hide, why would they be so concerned about the report coming out?
Absolutely.
Why would they? If they really thought that Sir Edward was the great guy that they all said he was, and he, obviously people have been talking about him for years and years and years about this, you would think they would welcome a report that would exonerate him. Because they say he's innocent. So if he's innocent, why aren't they pleased about it? They'd be delighted. It shuts everybody up, doesn't it? I think, I don't think we've been talking for a long time, and I might have forgotten this, but I know we just had a brief chat about it this afternoon. None of these cases, especially to do with Heath, nobody can possibly imagine all this is going on without some reason for this. It's not just people just not making things up because they don't like Edward Heath. It's ridiculous to anybody to suppose that. Why would anybody do that after all this time? And I mentioned the fact I was at a meeting with some, ask you to tell, remind me if I've already said this, I've talked to you about it, just a meeting where people didn't know who I was or what I stood for. And two gentlemen at the other end of the table, when we were just having a little break, one said to the other, he said, all this about Edward Heath, he says, what do you reckon, is it true? And the other chap says, yes, absolutely, he says, I was a yachtsman based in Cowes on the Isle of Wight.
Yeah.
He said, "We on the yachting community, we all knew about Heath. But
we knew.
What could we do? He was protected."
You're right. You mentioned this afternoon. You didn't say it tonight. It's really important you said that tonight.
Yes.
Because we're just going to wind it up now. We've got about 30, 40 seconds left on this before we have to go. And yes. As I said to you today as well, people have been in touch with this program. A man who's living in Miami now, who lives on the island of Jersey, who said he couldn't come on. Gave me some clues as to his identity. I'm not going to give those clues. I gave you the clues today. And he said they knew the same thing. A lot of comments came in, Robert, tonight, congratulating you on your humility, on the fact that it's not about you. It's never been about you. It's been about justice and the victims. And a lot of people wishing you all the very best. And Godspeed.
Please thank everybody. I do appreciate that. 100%.
And you know that you're welcome back on this programme anytime you want. I really mean that. I'm sorry
sincerely. Thank you very much indeed. And thank you for handling this. As a presenter myself, I think you've done a very good job tonight, if I may say so.
You're a gentleman. And David Icke, we wouldn't know each other if it wasn't for David Icke.
David Icke, the man who some of these creepy, cowardly journalists like to mock, but the only person of any note in this country who had the guts to accuse Edward Heath and Jimmy Savile while they were both alive.
While they were still walking around.
He was the only one who had the guts. None of these spineless people who mock him could do that. So please, everybody, remember that next time you hear these journalists trying to pull David Icke to pieces. They're not worthy to lace his boots.
Robert, Godspeed to you. Brilliant way to end it. Thanks so much for coming back on the programme.
Thank you, Richie.
Talk real soon. Robert Green, the activist and the campaigner for the rights of child abuse victims, joined us live on the line from his home in Warrington. Real pleasure to have Robert back on the programme. That's it for the show. We're done. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks for all the tweets. Big shout out again to Robert, to David for tirelessly reporting on Robert's story over the years and introducing him to me and to our audience. I'll be back with you tomorrow, the usual time, Thursday. Tomorrow is Thursday at 7 p.m. British Summer Time, while it's still British Summer Time. And Paul Craig Roberts will be among the guests. I'm looking forward to speaking with Paul. That's tomorrow, Wednesday. Thank you for listening, and we'll say good day. We'll say that's it for now, leaving you with some Take That. Just a bit of Take That to end it all, the programme. Let's hope the day is coming when these people will be in prison and we won't have to ever talk about it ever again. That day will be utopia. See you tomorrow, Wednesday. Bye now.
Today this could be the greatest day of our lives. Before it all ends, before we run out of time, stay close to me. Stay close to me. Watch the world come alive tonight. Stay close to me. Tonight this could be the greatest night of our lives.
this could be the greatest day.